Blog Talk Radio.
Quiet, please. Welcome to Movie Beat, conversations with filmmakers where we discuss everything film and television. Here on Movie Beat, you learn what to do and what not to do in making movies and TV, and we will talk to everyone in front of the camera and behind the scenes. And I'll provide you with the guests and the information you're going to want to have, whether you're a filmmaker or a fan. So now let's move behind the scenes here at Movie Beat. My guest today is casting director and acting teacher, and an actor himself, David Murphy, and he's the co-founder of the Chicago Acting School, The Green Room, and we're going to talk about him in just a moment, but first let me say welcome. It's good that you're here listening live or archived, and as you know, we've had a lot of difficulty with the website that is, again, under construction and underway, so we're using the blog RexSykesMovieBeat.me. RexSykesMovieBeat.me is the way you remember that. And you can go there right now and you can read about David and my other guests. But I want to welcome you and I want to say thanks for being here with us today and thanks for helping spread the word. You know, it's people like you, my listeners, who are out there and you are promoting the show to others. You're listening, you're sending in emails or phone calls, and I really, truly appreciate it. So without further ado, let me introduce my guest, and that is Mr. David Murphy, and he's a casting director, acting coach. As I said, he's the co-founder of the acting school, The Green Room, and there are multiple areas of expertise for which he is known. He's worked for 20 years in the field of acting, and since 2001, he's worked as a commercial casting director, or Connor Casting. He splits his time between casting and teaching acting. And around the casting office, there are two Davids. There's David O'Connor, the owner of O'Connor Casting, and then there's a David who is known as Murphy. Now, he's conducted well over 50,000 individual actor auditions, and for 16 years, he's taught at the Players Workshop of Second City. And he's directed over hundreds of shows, ranging from improv reviews to children's shows, and he's created several touring group performing for such clients as GV and Novus. I'm going to welcome David to the show. Are you here there, David? How you doing?
Yes, I'm still here.
Awesome.
Thank you for being kind and saying 20 years. That's nice.
It's been longer, huh?
It's been longer, but, you know, 20's good. We'll just stay there. It makes
cool.
Me feel younger.
And I understand. So what I wanted to talk to you about today is two things, primarily. You know, that is, actors always want to know how they can get more work or nail auditions and be successful. And you've been on both sides, plus you coach actors. So
yeah.
What and how? What can an actor do? I mean, let's start first with you being a casting director, then obviously you're going to share for your expertise as an acting coach. But the actor comes in to O'Connor Casting or somewhere you're casting a commercial. And let's talk commercials, because that's truly an important area. I want to tell my listeners right now that David is one of my coaches. Many of my listeners know that I've taught acting in the past for camera, and I've taught acting in Hollywood, things like that. But when others really want to learn from somebody who's really well qualified, we go to David and find out how to improve our own skills. And so I was fortunate enough to become a member of Green Room Studios acting levels. And I love it, David. I got to say, I truly love it. I just signed up for level 5 and I'm thrilled. And that means we're going to be seeing a lot of each other over the next 2 months. So when actors come in and they're there in front of you and the casting director, what's the best way they can make a positive impression on you? What besides fulfilling the requirements of the scene,
yes,
from the moment they enter, what do they need to do?
Well, okay. I think probably the thing that catches our attention best is that they've actually made decisions. What I mean by that is often a performer will come in and look to me or whoever's in the room casting, almost wanting to make us happy. So it's a little bit like, what would you like me to do? And we're actually looking for what decisions they've made on the piece. You know, it's the old, you know, people often fear to make a decision because they think that they might make a wrong decision. You know, 50-50 chance that it's right or wrong, but making no decision is always wrong. So, you know, have an attack on it.
I like that, and I appreciate that. I think I can speak for myself as an actor. I think some of the concerns that actors have when they come in is they go, I know I've got like 30 seconds, or I've got 2 minutes, or I've got 5 minutes if I'm lucky. And they're concerned about the time frame.
Right.
You know, it's like,
we'll take as long as we need. You know what I mean? So the time concern shouldn't be theirs.
Oh, okay. Excellent. So that alleviates the actor of at least one concern, that let the casting director control the time and you just go and come in with ready-made decisions.
Right. And you know, even if the decision isn't necessarily where the piece is going, what the client is looking for, the fact that you made a decision is nice enough and easier to put you into another direction than to start at ground zero and get you working and getting you to actually begin to make decisions in the room, and then all of a sudden we're out of time, you know. Our job, you know, there's so often you have I work with the person in the room, and I treat each person as an individual actor. I try to promote their strengths. Sometimes you have somebody who doesn't, you know, do much more than say, give me another take. In which case, if you're kind of flatline or make no decision, then, you know, you're kind of in the dust there.
You know, that makes a lot of sense because if they bring in what they thought about, you get to see how they think. I mean, you get to understand their thinking process and whether they think much or think little, I guess,
right,
would be the way to say it. And then you get to tailor it or adjust it.
And then also, I mean, have different approaches. I mean, I'm not looking for the same take, you know, three or four times in a row. I'm looking for different approaches to it. Once again, most likely, there's a great chance it won't be what's eventually shot. But by showing different takes, you're actually showing the fact that you have some range. And that range is what a client or a director is looking for. It makes you appear to be directable or workable. Just doing a consistent take means it kind of shows as if that's all you do.
So how can they best how can they best demonstrate their ability to do many things? Is it with the adjustments that follow? Or, I mean, should an actor ever say, let me try it a different way, or do we wait for you to say it? I mean, how do we?
No. I've, you know, part of it is if I, look, you can always say, hey, I've got another take, can I do it? The worst thing that'll happen is somebody will say no. If you truly do have another take, then I'll look at it. You know, the problem, sometimes I'll get somebody who does very similar takes, and then they'll say, I've got another one, And I'll either say, no, nah, I've got it. Or I'll say, well, if it's truly different, then fine. Don't waste my time otherwise.
Well, that's, I mean, that's a really valid point, because I think sometimes as actors, we think we're doing way different stuff when we're doing the same thing over and over again.
Right, right.
We may not be the best judge of what it is we're doing. And I think part of that comes by, I mean, don't you think that sometimes that happens because people get into a rut of rehearsing one way because they want to make sure that they at least have one way that they can do really well?
Right. They'll look at a script and they'll look at their role. They won't look at it as a whole. So they'll look at their part and they almost kind of go, okay, I get this. This is how this part is done. Sometimes, well, most of the time, I think you have to just kind of experience the whole piece to begin with. Look at it from different angles. Find different interps on the lines. Look at the whole and the outcome, the intention of the whole piece, what you're trying to say. Find different approaches. If you do that, you're a little bit more fluid and able to be moved from one place. If you just lock into your thing and see it as there's only one way to do it, then you end up being a little bit brain locked. And also, that's harder to direct.
Oh, that's again, really valuable. I think I've learned so much from you and from the Green Room Studio. I want to, before I ask my next question or make my statement, I want to give a shout out to the Green Room Studio. .tv is the website, correct? The Green Room Studio, all one word, .tv is the website. You can find information about David and his classes there and the classes with others, and do yourself a good turn, especially if you live anywhere near the Chicago area, to investigate that. I learned a lot, you know, and I've been in this business a while, and, you know, but just things, because you teach commercial acting there, and you also teach scene work for television auditions and shows and auditioning and callback and how to get the callback, how to work the callback. You know, there is little things like what page is this scene on? You know,
right?
No one in the 40 years of business had ever said, look at the page number, you know, and where in the script is this, for example, as a way of gaining information. And I just, you know, so there are. A lot of different ways the actor, a lot of different information that the actor can find by, could you elaborate on some of those? I mean, you want to give a few tips?
Cause sure. I mean, part of the idea of looking at the page number, now, you know, it's always going to depend on how large of a television role you're auditioning for. Let's say it's, you know, it's a smaller role. What page number are you in? Meaning if it's in the beginning, you're just kind of passing up or helping set up the information for the whole show. If it's more middle, it might be just kind of innocuous. Towards the end, you might be setting up the dramatic conclusion. You also would look at what episode this is. You might be part of a cliffhanger. You might be, you know what I mean?
Sure.
It kind of allows you to know what position you are in. If it's a smaller role, most of the time it's just somebody doing their job. So if it is a medical profession, you know, learn the whatever's in the line first, be able to say all of the medical terms. Backwards and forwards, or else I'm not going to believe that you are actually a doctor.
that makes good sense. And I kind of jumped us, you know, from commercials to TV show to, you know, back and forth a little bit, but I really appreciate that because I'm going to want you to talk about O'Connor and about your role as a cast director in commercials. I, for decades, didn't want to do commercials. I had a bad experience when I was a young man. I said, I will never do this again. I fired my commercial agent, said, that's it, I'm gone. And only in coming back to the green room did I realize that there is such a wealth of awesomeness in doing commercials and in the storytelling of commercials. And I know nothing about it, honestly. You know, I mean, I'm learning from you and cutting my teeth. But it is truly a fascinating arena for actors, especially one that can be quite lucrative.
Yeah, well...
Sorry about that. This is my computer taking a phone call for some reason, and you and I were talking off the air. I don't know why it does that.
Yeah. Fun with technology.
Absolutely. So my point was, I mean, you know, you got 30 seconds or a minute to tell a story. I mean, and to think about it in terms of sometimes that is different than I ever approached it. I just thought I was selling something, and I hated the notion.
No, I mean, there's so many things that are out there that are more non-sell than sell. I mean, the sell still is there, but it's how many things you have seen that it's just telling a little story, and it's later on that you get what the whole product was. So there's that. What we know is that in Chicago, especially, the lion's share of the work, even though we have all of the television shows right now, the lion's share is and will always be commercial. Sometimes certain casting rooms want to get to know you as a commercial actor to see how your strength, even if you're not booking the commercial, if I see that you're a competent actor, I'm more likely to bring you in for a TV or film role based on your performance in the room for commercial. Part of it is I can see more actors for a role commercially than I can see for television or film.
Well, that's really, you know, good to know. So let's talk about O'Connor and your work as a commercial casting director and kind of like what your day is like and what actors need to know about your day when you're there in order to work well with you.
So I worked full-time with O'Connor Casting for probably about 6 years, then went part-time, then stopped for a while, and then, like the mob, got pulled back in to do part-time, and now I'm more of freelance. My day usually is getting there somewhere around 8:30, making sure I'm set up for my room, know exactly what the piece is, have already worked it out, blocked it out, whatever, go to a meeting, and then usually start auditions around 9:30. And then I go from like 9:30 to 5:00. Running one audition after another.
It truly is back to back. And one of the things that I think I have begun to appreciate more than anything in knowing you and working, you know, in the Chicago market and experiencing that and going to Green Room is the notion that, you know, you guys really are pulling for the talent.
Yeah, I'm there only for the talent. I like working with actors, especially if they know what they're doing.
right.
Sorry.
No.
Somebody good in a room inspires me, too. So they get, after a while of seeing one audition after another, if they're all kind of similar, you can get kind of a little flatlined. So you got to... lick the electrical socket just to get some energy going through you. But somebody who comes in with thoughts, ideas, it stimulates you again. You really want to work it harder with them. Plus, you know, I've done so many that I already have all of these possible ideas that, you know, I treat everybody different, so they got to kind of fit in a wheelhouse or they're already along a certain line that I'm going to throw some ideas to them as well. I will give ideas to all of them, but, some of them I have like bones. if you will. Yeah.
When you say bones, you mean for some there's more meat and for some there's bones? Is that or
bones? What I mean by that is that I worked with improv for a long time, so my mind kind of has, I don't know, I associate weird things, come up with lines. I'm really awful to watch television with because I always go, why did they end that way? Shouldn't they have said this line? You get a bunch of those as you work through the day, and if I've got an actor who's really working and tossing in some ideas or whatever, I'll probably throw them the bone, and I won't give the same bone twice because you don't want to repeat stuff. But, you know, I'm going to do it with somebody who's working, not somebody who's just kind of giving me a pretty read on the text.
I get it. So if they're actively involved in creating a performance there, then you have some piece of inspiration. You share that with them that they can incorporate.
Sure. Especially too, if it's kind of fitting in the wheelhouse of where they're at.
Yeah, we kind of touched on this a little bit before, and that was, changing things up and not doing the same thing twice, or, you know, how actors sometimes get in a rut and think that they're being different.
Sure.
But so when somebody comes in and they're trying to do it different, is there some advice, you know, that you could help an actor prepare? I mean, should they prepare three or four or five different ways the scene and then bring in those five ways, hoping that they get to showcase one or two of them? Or what's a good, because the client, I know from being in class, you know, the client doesn't want to see the same thing five times in a row, and you're not probably going to send something up if it never changes, unless it's really good the first time.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong in any of my assumptions. So
no, you know, if the client is looking at what was done in the room, because we'll upload it to them. They'll look at that first take. If they're liking the performance and the actor, they'll obviously keep watching. If it is the same take on the second one, maybe they'll look to the third, but then they'll go, okay, it's all the same, I get it, and move on. If you're actually showing some difference, and this is the tough call. I'm not, you know, saying I got to get all character-y to be different. It might be a pacing difference, reaction difference, intention on the lines different. Some differences are very subtle and small. Some, depending on the piece, might be a little bit larger. It just is going to depend on the piece. Most commercial auditions, you know, you're allowed to, and actually, you know, it's wanted that you, I'm going to say, play with the piece a little bit. That would mean improvise, and I'm not talking about go crazy. But add a little bit based on the scene and the character, to add just a little or whatever. So the next time you do a take, you'd add maybe again, but make sure it's different. Otherwise, it's like, you know, is that improv or your script? You know, did you memorize it wrong?
Is there... When you have clients like ad agencies and the directors that are a part of that versus the directors in TV or the producers in a show, I mean, we should say that, you know, Dick Wolf is shooting at least three shows, maybe four, coming up in Chicago, and Empire shoots there, and you know, I mean, it's becoming a busy city. Is there much difference between what they seem to be looking for? Do they all, I mean, I, granted, you could have an idiot client or you could have a really well-versed client, but in general, do they tend to be looking for the same thing from commercial to television or how does it differ?
Okay. So I'd say a huge amount of commercial and follow me in this folly. A huge portion of commercial is actually a little bit closer to film. Or if you were to do a quick scene in a film than television. why I say that is for a while, a lot of commercial has been ranging more toward a real sort of quality in the actor. The television can be sometimes a little bit more heightened or dramatic. Now, I'm not saying, you know, be overly dramatic if you audition for television. It still has to have a real base. But, you know, I always look at it as what is an episodic, actually. You know, it is, if we go back in time, it's The Perils of Pauline. You know,
so right.
They are trying to kind of heighten things just a little bit so that you tune in next week to see whatever the advancement is. So to me, you want to kind of come in that honest or real place. Almost sometimes having a dry take is a great take. I'd rather be the one in the room to go, make that bigger, or let's, you know, they wanted to out by being goofy.
There was a little pause in what you said. I didn't hear it. It kind of dropped. Something about being goofy?
Yes. What I was saying is I'd rather the person in the room, the director in the room, the casting director, tell you, the actor, to make something bigger, or that the client is looking for something goofy, than for you to start out by being huge and goofy.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. Acting has changed. I mean, when I started back in the 70s, the conventional wisdom was start with lots of energy and let them tone you down. And I have seen the changes in through the decades. And I think that what you're just saying is really valuable for actors to know today, that that realness or the genuineness in most cases is where we evolved to. We're no longer doing 1940 drama, you know.
Absolutely. It is not. I'm representing emotion.
Well, it's even interesting when you look at sitcoms from, say, the 70s and the 80s, maybe even the 90s, to where they are today, and how jokes are delivered and how setups are made. I mean, it is a much more genuine delivery. It is more real. I mean, it seems more very different from the old days of setup and punchline.
Sure, and a lot of it is, you know, it always depends on the sitcom as well. I mean,
sure.
Depending on what you're auditioning, try to garner as much information on that show as you can. But a lot of sitcoms are going more for the depth of character than this kind of I'm, you know, goofy.
Right.
You know, even if you look at Sonny in Philadelphia.
Right.
The main characters are kind of the weird ones. Often the characters that they meet are a little bit more real. Big Bang Theory, the characters have some depth to them, although they're a little, you know, out there. But they're also usually meeting real people.
Well, the interesting thing, or the fascinating part about all this, is it goes back to actors needing to do their homework and researching the series, and not only that, you know, and watching the series and knowing what the tone of the show and the characters are. Because if, for example, you auditioned for Sonny in Philadelphia and you came in over the top, when you may be a character that's supposed to be genuine at that point, so that the leads are over the top. Right. You're doing you would do yourself a disservice because you didn't investigate enough to know your place in that particular series. So it comes back to actors, do your homework and know what you're auditioning for and
well,
think it
yeah,
through.
It's the it's look, an audition is an interview. So would you interview for a Fortune 500 company without knowing anything about the company, what they do, anything about what your position would be? You know, some people probably do.
Yeah, you would hope that, but
they're not going to get the interview, but nonetheless.
Right. Right. Well, I think sometimes as actors, having hung out with so many for so long, that we don't, those, I'm not sure how I should say this, but there are those who just don't think about it as a business. They think about it as an art or a craft or, some airy-fairy ideal, but they don't approach it like, there's really a bottom line to this. I mean, people have a lot of dollars on their commercial. They have a lot of dollars on their show or their feature. They're trying to hire the best actor for the job, so that it's successful, and they want to get their money's worth from them and everything else. That some people just don't think of it like how do I get savvy in the audition world? And I'll agree. I'm truly one of those people, because for me it was like, I want to be a good actor, but I hate auditioning. And when you learn that in order to work as an actor you must audition, there's no point in hating it. You
have to fall in love with it. You have to love the audition process, since most of your time is spent auditioning.
Yeah, and that's sometimes a very hard lesson for people to learn. Well, this is absolutely fascinating, Murphy. Again, I want to say that it's the Green Room Studios, Green Room Studio.
It's
TV,
the Green Room Studio. .tv.
.tv. Want to make sure that I give out the correct thing. And they have classes for all ages and commercial on camera and acting on camera. One of the things that you have done and do wonderfully is teach improv.
Yes. Many a year ago, I fell in with a motley group of people called improvisers, and fell in love with it. Ended up being trained and taught with the Players Workshop of Second City back in the day. I was taught by Josephine Forsberg and Martin DeMod, and ended up teaching it for quite a few years.
Go ahead, sorry.
No. You were going to ask how what?
No, I was just saying, the method of improv, is there a specific approach to what you taught, or how you were taught and what you teach?
Yes, I mean, I learned primarily the Viola Spolin method. Viola, of course, was back with the beginning stages of Second City. And the method difference there is that improvisation is just about communication. It's about hearing, truly listening to what the other person is saying and responding to it. That's all it is. It's what we do daily. It's not... We never were looking for humor in it. That doesn't mean that humor won't come out, but it was taught at that time more as a heightening of communication. I always thought if Viola Spolin method was taught in grade school, we'd have a whole society of people who where thinkers, listeners, could communicate quite well.
That's a truly worthwhile premise, because one thing that's not taught in school is how to listen well. Let me ask. Otherwise, you wouldn't have such boring instructors for most of
them. Well, absolutely. Let me
I don't want to. I don't want to disparage anybody, but it is a. It is a. What is there a piece or a philosophy or a bullet point toward the communication, the listening aspect of improv from this method that you can share with the listener?
Yes. The biggest thing you get from that is my partner, the person I'm on stage with or in the scene with, is the most important person. Meaning it isn't about me. It isn't about what I want to do or what I want to say. It's about me listening and supporting what my partner is saying and doing. If they also hold that theory, then what you're doing is putting energy into each other and supporting and heightening each other. If there is a break in that link, meaning all I'm doing is worried about myself, there's an obvious crash to the scene.
From class, one of the things that we did recently in class a few weeks back was you brought up about supporting each other. You brought up about being willing to fail, and also about being careful about driving the scene.
Right.
So I imagine, you know, the idea, and I want you to elaborate, but I mean, I imagine the idea being, if you're truly there supporting and contributing and paying attention, and the other person is the most important, these other issues like driving the scene and stuff probably are not going to rear their head as much.
Sure. Depending on the scene, sometimes a performer will come in going, this is how I'm going to do the scene. So already they're starting out kind of going, this is about me and this is how I want to do my role. Without even anticipating that the performer you're working with, who could very well be the heavy portion of this scene, is going to energetically play it differently or approach differently. And what you'll get then are, you know, what I'll call two people with their heads in different buckets, meaning they don't seem connected. You wonder why they're even talking to each other, how they could possibly be, you know, married or friends or whatever it is, just totally disconnected. As opposed to going, I have some ideas, but I'm going to see how my partner is approaching. If they're starting out the scene, let me check that energy and adjust myself accordingly.
When people audition, and let's say they audition in pairs, and sometimes they're paired up and they've never met each other, and they've now been in the outer room, and maybe they've got to run some lines, or even for that matter, I suppose, with the reader. If the actor does prepare and go, here's how I'm going to do it, and isn't paying attention, doesn't make the other person the most important person in the room, while they could be, I guess, brilliant as an actor technically, one of your concerns is a casting director and talking about what acting is like today in terms of the real, the rawness of it, the genuineness of it is that if they would be superb delivering, you know, a monologue, but if they can't work with the other person, if there's no give and take there, then they've kind of shot themselves in the foot. Am I making too large a leap here? Or?
No. I think that's fairly accurate. I mean, you know, sometimes, once again, depending on the client,
right?
It might not matter, but you know, if they technically do a brilliant job. But how brilliant truly are they if there is disconnection,
right,
or they don't seem to be in response to the other person?
Right, right. I mean, I guess that's what I mean, where we're headed with that is that, you know, they talk about acting as being reacting. It's about listening. It's about that connection. It's about the magic that happens between two people. And so, really, I guess as actors, that's what we're hoping to accomplish, is to be so present that we allow for things to happen because we're paying attention and the other person is truly important. And we're not trying to fulfill some agenda in our head, unless the agenda in our head is maybe character driven.
Right, right. You know, the you know, I'm a firm believer of the, you know, a lot of acting is reacting. I remember years and years ago talking with Martin DeMott, and we would go over some of the lines that always kind of amused us the most, and they were always these lines like, "Oh, really? You're kidding me." And what they were just reactions to something or someone. They weren't joke lines. They weren't,
right.
You know, they were just response lines that were well placed.
Well, it makes me aware when I listen to, you know, those superstar actors or those A-list actors or, you know, good quality actors, and they go, "Oh my God, it was so great working with this person. They're so giving," or "they're such a generous actor," or "the experience was so magical." And imagine that what they're saying is what you've been talking about, that you've made the other person so important.
Right. They lifted me up. I could feel them give me that boost. And, you know, with hope, they were doing the same for that actor that they call giving. You know, there was always in working with improv or working in scene work as an instructor, you'd always have an actor who would want to work with what they perceived as the strongest actor, right? And
uh-huh.
Part of the reason they wanted to work with that actor or actress was because they were giving and they listened and they, you know, did these, you know, positive things to help support their partner. And I always would ask, well, what about you would make this actor want to work with you? What I mean by that is that are you those qualities too? You know, and sometimes, especially in training, the way to develop those qualities is to work with somebody who is maybe a little weaker than you so that you can uplift them and gain that listening and supportive quality.
It's fascinating because, I mean, it applies to life as well. You know, the more you uplift others, I guess the stronger you become. You know, the more you give, the more you're able to receive in some ways, as long as you're open to receiving.
Right.
Some people can close that off too. You know, they can give and go, "Oh yeah, but no, don't, you know, I don't want anything. I don't want any," you know, and they shut down any kind of receptivity. But in this case, with the actors being open, being able to give to each other and to be able to receive, that actually is much more fascinating, you know, to watch that relationship develop. And it must be, I can only imagine what it must be like for a casting director when they see that happen, either, or an acting coach when they see that happen in class, or they see that happen, you know, with a couple of actors in the room, especially when it's contrasted by maybe pairs and pairs of others that don't connect.
Right. I mean, you're looking at real, true moments, and that's, so off, I mean, that's the magic, is you're looking at all of a sudden this evolve.
Well, I got to say, I'm totally and thoroughly enjoying this, but we are now at that halfway point. I don't mean but, I should say and. We're at that halfway point. And so I'm going to have to take a little bit of a break, and we'll be right back. So I make a couple of announcements. So hang in with me, Murphy, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Mr. David Murphy of the Green Room Studio. TV, acting classes in Chicago. When we come back, I'd like to talk about the Green Room and some of the characters there, and you co-founded that, and so we'll talk about the Green Room Studio. He also works with O'Connor Casting in Chicago, casts scores of things, so you want to go check out his website, and the website there at Green Room Studio TV, and look at their offerings. You're listening to Rex Sikes Movie Beat. The official URL is rexsikes.com. That's my name. It's Rex Sikes. That site has been was hacked. That's why I've been having so much trouble. So in the interim, I put up a blog, Rex Sikes Movie Beat. Well, one word, rexsikesmoviebeat.me. Or to easily remember, it's Rex Sikes Movie Beat Me. And you can go there and you can find out about upcoming guests, read articles, find out about festivals. The article on David and the link to listen to the show live or archived is there. All of these discussions that I have with actors are archived. I'm sorry, with talented actors and producers and directors are archived. There's over 500 hours of professional filmmakers sharing their expertise with you, so that you can advance your career and make things happen. And they're all archived there. You can also get it at Blog Talk Radio. You can also get it from the iTunes store. It's absolutely free. And all we ask in exchange is that you share the information with others. Let them know about the discussion. Share it. Use your favorite social media means to promote my guest offerings, and to promote the show so that others can tune in and listen as well. My listeners primarily consist of A-list talent behind and on camera, all the way down to people just picking up a camera or just stepping in front of one for the very first time, in fans worldwide. I got to tell you, I love you all, and I appreciate all the love and support. And it thrills me to be able to offer people like David and others to you so that you can listen and learn. And so I hope that you do, and I hope that you enjoy it, and that you'll continue to spread it. I want to say that we're looking at a date in June. That we could have a workshop with David and another casting director. And we're looking at a June, probably in Chicago, could be in Milwaukee. But if this is something that interests you, and I hope that it does, and it should, because both gentlemen, actually, I'll tell you the other person's name is Paul Weber from Los Angeles. It would be David and Paul. And just a fabulous offering of two very knowledgeable people in this business. And the advantage of having both David and Paul together is they're two separate markets, and you do work somewhat differently in both of those markets. And so together they comprise a really cool source of information you need to know whether you're out on the West Coast or flying back and working in Chicago or vice versa. So keep that in mind and stay tuned. As far as upcoming guests, I'll let you know as we proceed. So stay tuned to Facebook and Twitter and rexsikesmoviebeat.me. All right, so we're back with Mr. David Murphy.
Hello.
Hello. So let's talk about the Green Room Studio and how that came about and who you work with. There's Sean and other people and just a little background information about that. I was very happy, I got to say, to find out about the Green Room. The way I did was another actor. One night I was on Facebook and said, "Hey, what you up to?" And I said, "Well, I'm just blah, blah, blah." He said, "I've signed up for some classes in Chicago and I'm looking forward to it." And I said, "Oh, cool. I'll do it." I was like, you know, I'm looking, I mean, I'm a sight unfound, you know, I mean, a sight unseen. I went, "Yeah, no, I'll go for it. I'm looking for good classes." And he had started then to tell me all about it. Then I went to the site and said, "Yep, nope, I'm in." And I signed up that night. And so then we joined together, or, you know, traveled together, things like that. And I really like it. I mean, I really, really like it. I really look forward to it. And while I was away for a number of months, I truly missed it. So can you give us some background about the fine people who make up the Green Room?
Sure, sure. The Green Room started like maybe, I'm guessing, around 9 years ago. It was started by Sean Bradley and moi. Sean and I both were casting at O'Connor Casting, and we would often discuss things we saw in the room. I mean, you know, it's what you do. You talk about work. and how anywhere from, you know, new actors to those who have been around for a while, how they might kind of sometimes implode at an audition or a callback. And, you know, the truth is, look, you go out there, you get an agent, hopefully, and the agent goes, great, and sends you out into the world. And you walk into one of these rooms in casting, and you're not quite sure what's going on and what they want. And, of course, casting sees once you cross that threshold, you're a professional. So we figured, you know, we like business in Chicago, and at that time we didn't have as much, and so thankfully it has built and we have a lot now. But
right.
We wanted to present a casting's point of view of how people need to approach on-camera auditioning. You know, there's a lot of actors' point of view, and that's great. But we figured, look, we're the ones talking to the client, so we have an eye, you know, we know what they are looking for. So we wanted to present classes to strengthen the core of Chicago actors.
I think I've said this on the air to others, but I'll repeat it. That is, I've studied with a lot of well-known, really, really well-known acting coaches throughout the years, and they're all fine. They're all great. They're all wonderful. But and I'm not, again, there's no disparagement to this, but it's craft oriented, and it's, you know, here's what you do as an actor. But for an actor to eat, you know, and to be a professional actor, it has to intersect with business, and it has to intersect with the people that the actors come up against. And like I said, I hated auditioning for many, many, many years. And I considered myself bad at it. I don't consider myself great at it yet. But the point is that I've learned to embrace it, learned to love it. And how I've done that is I've got a lot of friends who are casting directors over the years now. And I've learned more from being like in classes like your class or sitting in a casting session or being a reader or running the camera for casting director friends of mine than I have in the acting classes that I've done. And what I mean is you are the guys who are there who are looking at the actors to bring them in, and we're better to get your information from than the person who could potentially hire you or give you a job opportunity through their client. And while workshops don't guarantee employment, that's not the point I'm making. What the insight that you bring to an acting situation, an auditioning situation, and that other casting directors it's turned my head around 360 degrees from where I was as a younger person.
We try to approach it really from a directing or casting directing point of view. So I'm not telling you as I watch you what I would do. You know, that's not my job. And you know, if I approached you as an actor looking at your lines going, well, this is what I would do, then it's a little bit like, well, I should just do it. I'm approaching as a director and basing it off of my work in casting, but also working with clients and trying to give you, based on where you are, how to kind of raise that up, the bar up a little bit more, and to give you options that would be appropriate for the, you know, for that particular role. You know, there's an old line about you want to stand out but fit in. And that refers to fitting in to be the type of a person that a client would be looking for, but stand out by making smarter choices.
Absolutely. Can you kind of elaborate on maybe with the green room, the different levels, and why or what the thinking is behind each level, so that people understand the approach to the method behind the madness of auditioning in this way.
Sure, absolutely. we first of all, we have five levels in the on-camera course. Yes, they build to a degree off of each other, but truly our first level is to make those who are either have an agent or are wanting to get an agent and will be put into a casting room here soon or you know, eventually. First level is really about these kind of basic things that will keep your head above water in that audition room. You know, part of it is I know that actors, it could be money, it could be, you know, their life gets busy, that they may not continue right away with the classes, if at all. But by going into that first level, it should give them some strength and confidence to at least approach auditions without being lost in the shuffle. So level one deals with specificity on camera, isolation moments, meaning, you know, chaos and camera don't fit. How to kind of bring that down in the pocket in terms of a smaller performance or more camera worthy versus I'm pitching to an auditorium of 1,000 people, to be more honest with the work, how to kind of play a little bit within the lines themselves. If people continue on to level two, then we'll approach a little bit more improvising within, and all of the first level one is geared toward commercial, but then again, it kind of fits with, you know, film and television as well. Same thing with level two, it's commercial, but now it goes into a little bit harder scripts, how to deal with improv, a little bit of improv in commercial, some switch works, approaching spokes. Level three deals stronger with switches. Every script has a switch. Looking at and, you know, really interpreting the commercial or the copy. Half of three is that, and then we begin to move into television, film, the smaller roles. You got to be good at a small role in order to be asked back for something larger. Level four is all movie and television roles. Level five is pure auditions. You know, you got to come in prepared to audition. We run it as if it's an audition, and then you'll get, you know, a call back with somebody out of either Simon Casting or PR Casting here in Chicago, who will run it like a callback and then let you know what is working, what isn't working.
Absolutely, truly valuable, and truly worthwhile. And I've enjoyed each moment of those classes, and look forward to the upcoming ones. I just want you to know, we got about 20 to 25 minutes left in this portion of our discussion. And you've also worked, you know, directly for small ad agencies and production companies. Let me start this way. Why do people want a cast director? Because there are people out there, there's students who are making their first films, there's people who now they got a little bit of a budget or they're doing some crowdfunding and they're starting their first feature and they think they can cast it themselves. And you work directly with production companies and ad agencies. And there's a reason that people have casting directors. What should the filmmakers know about casting?
Well, you know, the thing with casting is that, you know, our primary focus is your project, you know. And in talking with, whether it be the director, producers, whatever, we get a strong grasp of what you're looking for each character, the specs on that character. And because we've, you know, been around for so long, we have a vast knowledge of the actors that are out there that could, you know, fit into these roles. Often when you are casting yourself, you're looking for actors to submit to you, which, you know, sometimes you're, you know, if you're not going through an agent either, you're just getting whoever happens upon your ad, which could be an actor, it could be somebody who just got a headshot. And then you're kind of having to settle versus somebody kind of cutting through going, here's your stronger people for this particular role out of all of the agents here in the city. And so we're working, you know, to make sure that you find that person that you're looking for. You know, we also know the integrity of the performers. Meaning, if there's somebody who, you know, I know is never on time, often kind of forgets where they're supposed to be and when, I'm probably not going to bring them in for a particular, you know, role. I'm not going to saddle you with somebody who's irresponsible.
Yeah, I think right there you spoke from both sides. You know, filmmakers know that you're going to send up good talent because, you know, that's your job and your reputation is on the line, and you're not going to give them somebody who's going to make you look bad or that's going to let them down. And actors should be aware of that then too and be as professional as possible, because it's not just their career, but it's working with casting directors to get their career going.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's the old on time is 15 minutes early versus 5 minutes after, you know, things like that.
Well, that used to drive my ex-wife crazy. That I was always I'm always like, no, you don't understand. Early is early. On time is early. So, but it's
right,
true.
Right. And you know, we all know stuff happens, you know what I mean? So we get that. But, you know, if you're notoriously, you know, I always find that the person who is traveling from out of state is usually there early, and the person who lives across the street is always there late. It's just
right, right. Well, it's true. And, I mean, whether you work in Chicago where there's, you know, voluminous traffic and backups, and or L.A. where the same conditions apply, you need to account for that. I mean,
already know it.
Right. But there are those people who think, okay, my set call is 6, I'll leave at 4, I've given myself 2 hours. And maybe, especially in L.A., maybe they should have given themselves 3 or 4 hours, you know, because
right.
Stuff does happen. And if you don't show up and they're ready to shoot, you know, then it's your butt that gets, not your butt, but the actor's butt, you know, that gets, they're the one who didn't show up on time. So,
right. And depending if they've gone through casting, it could be our butt, too.
It could be your butt, too. Absolutely. Absolutely. So you've talked, I mean, you and I have had little bits of conversation that that you might be inclined to do an improv class.
I love improv. I love teaching improv. And usually once a year, maybe once every 2 years, I'll toss out an improv class, and I'll probably be doing one in the next 2 months through the green room. Sometimes it can be tough to put up an improv class in Chicago because there are so many improv schools in Chicago.
Sure.
But I do it because I believe in the Viola Spolin. I also know that there are actors who want to feel more confident in improv, but they're not looking to be an improviser. What I mean is they're not looking to be on main stage or whatever. And they just want to kind of tone what it is so that when they're working in casting rooms, whether it's adding a little bit to a script or some of these, let's say like a Sonic commercial, where you have to basically improvise the whole thing, that you are comfortable in doing so. And so that's what I like to work with. So in my class, you know, I'll teach those foundations of how to be comfortable in that. Often I'll also comment on script and how to deal with, you know, playing within a script. It is certainly not what I think some people think, that, you know, I don't want, if you've got a script, I don't want you to, you know, make a mini series out of it. Maybe all you're doing is adding one extra line. Maybe all you're doing is adding or paraphrasing a little bit to segue the scene nicer, you know?
Well, let's pretend for a second, though, that you said, okay, I want you to go ahead and I want you to improv for 5 minutes. The difference between what you just said and say, go ahead, you know, you got 5 minutes, show me what you got, you two or three. A couple of things. One is certainly there's improv for comedy purposes, but that's a specialty. There's spontaneous theater has been around probably since cavemen, you know, and people were people made up stuff and acted it out. So, but in the case of improvising now for commercials or television, even with a long form improv, all of the other skills that you're learning for your auditioning would still apply, like those editable moments and the bringing it down and to, because you, I would imagine you'd have to, you'd want somebody who still has an awareness of the of where they are, and that being in front of a camera.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that it doesn't become now a main stage thing. It's still for camera. And, you know, for camera, basically it's as if your audience was, you know, 3 feet in front of you. You know, how big are you going? You know, you'll make them want to leave if you're, you know, too huge. So what it becomes is almost a intimate conversation, like, you know, a couple people hanging around a restaurant table having coffee, more of an intimate conversation that I'm the fly on the wall listening to. It's not done so you're performing for me.
Right. You know, I heard a story. I don't know if you shared it or someone else, you know, in my sphere of influence, anything, but they were talking about a particular actor in a scene, and a well-known actor like a Nicholson or a Brando or Tommy Lee Jones or someone. I don't recall who the actor was either. Sorry. The director was standing. This is the days when they're before monitors. So they said, let's do it again because I wanted you to do this. You know, I wanted this reaction from you, and whoever the famous actor was said, watch the dailies. And apparently they went in the daily room, and the director, you know, when the next day after seeing the dailies, said, you know, brilliant, that's everything I wanted. And it was just the fact that the actor knows camera and knows what lens they're using and understands how to give that moment without
sure.
it being a theatrical moment.
Sure, yes. I mean, it's even with, you know, you'll have an actor go, what's my frame? You know, I don't mind somebody asking that myself, but I have heard other castings say things like, I'll worry about the frame, you worry about the acting.
right.
And part of that reasoning is because if you watch a camera, you'll know what your frame is.
Right.
And well, often, actors will do the, hey, what's my frame? More like, hey, look what I know about the biz, you know, and it's like, oh, come on.
Right. No, that's an excellent point, because those actors that work, say, in television, you know, and they're in a series or something, they're used to this. They, you know, the more you do it, the more you learn. And since you learn more, you have, sorry about the ringing in the background. There's nothing I can do about it. But since you learn more, I mean, you learn what that is, you incorporate it more, and you respond because out of your awareness. My point being that does that all make sense to you? I mean, what,
yes.
What I'm
getting. Yeah, I mean, and that's the tough thing, too, is especially if you're new to all this, is that there is a learning curve to it all. There is a getting used to it, getting it into your bones, if you will, where somebody who auditions a lot or works a lot, you know, they've already found their comfort zone with it all. You know, that's why you really want to not listen to the voices in your own head so much as listen to the person in that casting room. They do have your best interest at heart.
Well, it it again goes to I guess what I'm assembling in my head and thinking about is that the better trained, professionally trained, the better equipped. It's like, you know, you spend 6 weeks rehearsing a play for opening night, and you do that so that you hit your marks and you're in your light and you say your lines and you know what you're doing, you know, and adjustments are being made. But they do that so that they can open, and then hopefully it goes well from opening and whatever else. But the same thing is true with actors in everyday life when they walk into an audition room. If you're so well trained and you know your business so well and you know your scene so well, then whatever they throw at you doesn't throw you off.
Right. You're able to go with the flow. You know, and that's why. Look, I don't care whether, you know, and I'm not a big hawker in terms of our classes. You know, you don't know whether you're going to have a couple auditions every week, or sometimes it gets dry and you have, you know, an audition every, you know, month. You don't know how often things are going to go. I find that, you know, I've had actors take the classes we have and then come back and take it again. And they say, look, I know that being in a class every week makes me stronger when I audition, because my mind every week is in this field versus not doing classes, and all of a sudden here comes an audition and you're feeling a little rusty or, you know, a little uncertain, you know. What you're doing is keeping yourself flexible, primed, and ready to go.
Well, I told you, you know, I had some makeup classes that I needed to make up, and to go back to the different levels of makeup, the classes to me was absolutely thrilling. And I said, you know, I think I'd like to do the whole series again. And for the precise reasons that you mentioned, you know, if you're auditioning every single day or a few times a week, you're getting better at it, hopefully, by virtue of the fact that you're repeating it, you know, and you're repeating the correct things over and over again. And so you get good. But if you only have an audition once a quarter or twice a year or very rarely, then it makes sense to be in a class where you get to practice those skills and those abilities over and over again, because then when you do audition, you have increased the likelihood that you may, and there's tons of reasons why you might not get a callback, but that you may get a callback, at least you're professional. And the thing that to me strikes me as important, and I didn't think this way all of my life, you know, I think a lot of actors, if they're broke and they're poor, you know, they're looking for the easy way out, but everything in life costs. Everything in life costs. If I go to the supermarket tomorrow, I go, I need some bread for my family. They'll go, great, give me some money. And I go, well, you know, can I trade you for it? Or can I, you know, have it and come back another day? And they're going to say no. And so everything costs money. But the question truly is, you know, so classes cost money and it requires time and effort and energy. But if you're really sincere and serious about your career, you'll find a way to make the amount of money you need in order to get the professional training that you have to be a professional in this business today. Because otherwise, what's it costing you not to do it? You know, there's a price there too, and it's costing you jobs.
Absolutely. You know, it's a level of what are you prepared to do?
Right.
You know, and, you know, it's sad. Then I'd say, you know, maybe look to, you know, you want something that's reputable, of course, but I don't know, maybe take a look at your local college and see if they have, like, continuing education that might be, you know, colleges now, though, are expensive, but that maybe you could get something a little cheaper, too, that might be supportive as well. Anything you got to do if it is truly, you know, your love, your dream, your goal, if this is, you know, in your DNA and you just got to do it, then do it.
Well, you know, you mentioned, you know, the idea of every week I'm in a class and it keeps my head involved, you know, it keeps me in the game. And truly, I mean, I very much value everything I've learned from you and I value the Green Room. And I'm not saying this for it to be a commercial for the Green Room, although I think people should take your classes. I'm saying it because the mindset truly is everything. If you really want to accelerate your career, then you've got to get training and you've got to do the things to further your career. And you got to do little things every day to do your career, whatever that is, whether you're doing it at home alone in your apartment or, you know, you're getting headshots done or you're out mid networking or, you know, you just do something to further your career as opposed to just sitting and hoping that things happen for you. I think the people who make it are the people who pursue it more so than anybody else.
It's a business and it's your business and you have to be on top of it. You know, forever I would, you know, talk to an actor and I'd say, what do you do? And they'll say, you know, I'm a server or I'm a waiter, waitress. And I'd say, okay, what do you want to do? Well, I want to be an actor. I said, let's start here. When somebody asks you what you do, you say, I'm an actor. Right now, I'm making money by being a server.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Hey, so we've got about 5 minutes left, but let me ask you this. How do you like to be stayed in touch with? Because everybody says, well, you know, contact us or send us postcards or remind us of your plays or your work, you know, as a casting director. Is there a way for people to professionally maintain contact with you once they've auditioned for you? Is there a preference or how does that, what advice can you give the actors out there?
Well, you know, you can send, if you audition for something and had a good experience or book something or whatever it is, and you want to reach out to that, you know, casting person, you can send them a card or a something in the mail. That works. If you get to know them better, probably you could end up emailing. You don't want to, you know, constantly just hit people with email. In terms of your information, like headshot, resume, you know, I maybe send it to casting, you know, once a year, but I wouldn't send it much because, you know, they go through agents and they see your stuff. But you can update if you're doing something, if you book something else or doing a show or whatever it is, send a quick note going, hey, I'm doing this. Invite them out. You never know.
Well, very cool. Well, we're just about at that time. I want to remind you it's thegreenroomstudio.tv. It's thegreenroomstudio.tv. And Murphy, as he's known, or David, teaches classes there, as do others. And they work together and have other offerings. So go ahead and check that out. But what I'd like to do as we close out is just offer you the last couple of minutes, if there's anything that we haven't touched on that you'd like to say or share, or in closing remarks you'd like to leave people with, then this would be the time.
You know, I don't know. One thing, I guess, be fearless. You know, there's a level of you can tell when an actor walks into a casting room, and you know, it's their time. It's their room for when they're in there, as opposed to kind of coming in almost apologetic or timid, as if you perceive it's my room and my time. You know, you're the one looking for the job, man. So, you know, I already got one. So, don't be a jerk. You know, don't be arrogant or rude, but, you know, attack it with that sort of, man, I'm here to just, you know, kick butt.
I think that's a really awesome piece of advice. And I think it's sometimes difficult for people to wrap their brain around, because I think we've grown up with the idea that, well, you know, you're a guest in somebody's house, so you have to behave a certain way, or you have to defer to the homeowners or something, that the idea of going into a casting room, you know, is somehow that's your time at that moment. But that's the reality of it.
Well, absolutely. I mean,
correct me if I'm wrong,
dealing with your agent, you know, don't be an idiot or a jerk, but a lot of people get an agent and then never talk to them again because they're waiting for them to call, you know, their agent to call them, as opposed to keeping a connection. I mean, they're working for you.
Well, and that's cool. And I guess if you've got the audition, they've made time for you to be there. So you ought to use the time and show up as a potential problem solver, or somebody who adds value to them, as opposed to, you know, a beggar looking for a handout.
Right. Observation, not desperation.
Oh,
we can read desperation.
Very, very cool. You know, I've enjoyed this very much. You've really, I think, provided lots of value, lots of tips and insights. I hope that people will listen to this not just once, but many times over and over again. And I would surely like to have you back again sometime if you're willing to discuss more about acting and casting in general or specific.
Sure. That would be fun.
All right. Well, that's cool. Also, a reminder to those who are listening, or if you tuned in late, that I'm really trying to make something happen. And as they have around June, maybe the third week of June or something, have a workshop with both David Murphy and another cast member, Paul Weber. Paul has also been a guest of the show. He's in Los Angeles, and together this is truly a good team. I think it'd make a really valuable workshop, and maybe do it in the Chicago area. So if you're interested in that, you certainly can email me through the website and do that. Or if you know my email address, do it. I don't give it out over the air just because of spam reasons, but if you're a listener of the show, go ahead and email me. So, David, people can contact you through the Green Room, and obviously they can take your classes. This has been a really awesome time together, and I really appreciate you making it part of your day. And I look forward, I truly look forward to next week, Wednesday, where I get to walk back into the Green Room Studios and have class with you again.
Yeah, it should be a good group, too. So,
well,
thank
awesome.
You so much, Rex.
Well, you bet. I'm going to call you in just a little bit and touch base. But thank you so much. That's Mr. David Murphy, casting director in the Chicago area and Ed O'Connor casting as well, and the Green Room Studio in Chicago. All right, everybody. Thank you, Murphy. Again, just really wonderful, and we'll just talk in a couple of minutes.
Okay, sounds great. Be well.
All right, you too, man. Mr. David Murphy, a fascinating guest, and I really appreciate him being here. And I thank you, my listeners, for being here as well. Upcoming guests that I will announce. There are guests coming up. I just haven't put them up on the websites yet, or normally, you know, I have an itinerary for like a year. I haven't done that because of the difficulties with the website, so I hope you understand. But we've got many more exciting guests coming up in the near future, so be sure to stay tuned, and please keep sharing the website and the show and these interviews and discussions with all your friends and your contacts. You can become a member. Oh, and there's a Green Room Studio TV Facebook page, and Murphy has a Facebook page as well. I should have asked because, you know, I don't know, you know, the policies regarding those, but at least you can look them up on Facebook at that point. You can become, I have a group called Film Network on Facebook. It's a film network, and it's got producers, directors, actors, writers, and more. And then there's the Rex Sykes Movie Beat Facebook Friends page, and you can like that page and join it. And then in both of those, you'll be made aware of upcoming guests and seminars and workshops like the one that I've just talked about with David. And you can follow me at Twitter at Rex Sykes Movie BT. It's Rex Sykes Movie. The last word is abbreviated BT. And so I want to thank you for being here. Thank those people who were in the chat room while we were live. And I wish you all to a fabulous day. So make your movies, complete your projects, and until we meet the next time, that is a wrap.